So Jesus lived his entire life in the shadows of kings. And these long shadows cast across Jesus' life were full of expectations. Expectations placed on him by people, some of the people who were closest to him, some of his best friends, other kings at the time. People put these expectations on Jesus that he never set out to meet. Like, their expectations for what he was there to do and accomplish were never in alignment with what he was actually there to do or accomplish. The most influential, powerful king at the time of Jesus' life was this king named Herod. And Herod was this, he was the anxious type. He was the nervous type. So Herod had across his kingdom like a straight line of fortress palaces. So if someone came in to attack Herod, take his kingdom from him, he could retreat in the opposite direction while sending his soldiers into battle. And then he would go from like luxurious safety to luxurious safety to luxurious safety. The most famous one is this picture here you see. It's the Herodian. And this is a mountain that Herod quite literally had moved. He had this mountain collected. And this next picture, you'll see like an aerial shot of it. And this is what he built, a mountain, so that he could put a fortress on top of it. If you go back to the last picture for a second, you see a town there at the bottom of this picture. That town is not far from the historical Bethlehem. If you know anything about Bethlehem, you know that that's where Jesus was born. So I say that Jesus lived in the shadows of kings. I mean, he quite literally and interpersonally lived in the shadows of kings. We'll go to the third picture. This is like a picture of what the Herodian probably looked like in an artistic rendering. And this is what Jesus, when Jesus was born, he was born in Bethlehem, and this was what would have been above him. You could have seen Bethlehem from the Herodian. You could have seen the Herodian from Bethlehem. And from the Herodian, Herod sent his soldiers into Bethlehem in order to put to death all the young men, the babies and toddlers and children, because he heard there was this Jesus who was this other, he was different. There's something else about Jesus, and he knew that someday this Jesus was probably going to overthrow his kingdom. And so he went in and had these acts of violence from the Herodian on the little boys in Bethlehem. An attempt to stop Jesus. We've been in this series, The Path of Disruption, for 3 weeks now. And in this series, it starts in Luke 9:51, and it says, Jesus resolutely set out for Jerusalem. Now, the thing about Jerusalem is the city that we've heard before. If you spent any time in the Bible or in church, you've probably heard the name Jerusalem before. But for these people who he was originally walking with and doing life with, Jerusalem is like the city of kings. Like, the golden era of the Jewish people would have been with King Saul and King David and King Solomon. And all three of these kings called Jerusalem home. And so when Jesus rides a donkey into town and people are all around and they're cheering for him, like, he's riding a donkey into the city of kings, reinforcing. Everyone thinks he's going to ride into Jerusalem and establish his earthly kingdom. Because he's walking into the city of kings. Like, it'd be like someone riding into Washington, D.C., and a parade naturally, organically breaks out. And they're like, yeah! Because Washington, D.C., it's like a loaded, powerful city with history. And that's what Jerusalem would have been for these people. So as Jesus is riding his donkey into Jerusalem, the city of kings, people think he's there to establish his earthly kingdom. They call this out in Luke chapter 19. They're yelling this at Jesus. They're yelling, blessings on the king who comes in the name of the Lord. Peace in heaven and glory in the highest heaven. They think he's quite literally riding into Jerusalem, the city of kings, to establish his kingdom. They're saying, blessings on the king, glory to the king. Because Jesus lived every moment of his life with expectations placed on him he never intended to fulfill. If you look at a different passage of this same time in Matthew chapter 21, verse 9, you see that at the same time, some people are saying this, and in Matthew 21, 9, they're saying this to Jesus as he's riding in. Jesus was in the center of the procession, and the people all around him were shouting, praise God for the Son of David, blessings on the one who comes in the name of the Lord. So this Son of David, this moniker, this thing that they're saying to him, this is very significant historically. Because God made David a promise about David's descendants. And Jesus was a descendant of David. And so when they're saying, praise God for the son of David, they're referencing this very specific promise that God made for David. It's in 2 Samuel 7, 12 through 13. It says this, for when you die, this is God speaking to David, for when you die and are buried with your ancestors, I will raise up one of your descendants, your own offspring, and I will make his kingdom strong. And so what you have is you have like Jerusalem, you have Israel, and they have these kings, these powerful kings, and it's this golden era. And then that influence and that power and that control dies off, and they're enslaved by other countries. But there's this promise they look to, they rely on. I mean, they're anxiously awaiting that one day the descendant of David is going to come back. He's going to put us back where we belong, like a place of power. He's going to end this slavery that we're in, and we're going to be free once again. And then Jesus comes along. Like, oh, he's an interesting guy. He's not just an interesting guy. He might be the guy. I mean, he checks all the right boxes. This is what he's going to do. He's going to ride into town. He's going to come into Jerusalem. He's going to put together an army. He's going to overthrow Herod, and we're going to be set free. Yeah! This is not what he was trying to do. This is their expectation from him, but it's not what his goals were. Even his closest friends thought that he was there to do a very specific thing. And look at what Peter, one of his closest friends, says in Luke chapter 22. What happens to Peter in Luke 22? See, this is Peter after Jesus, he rides into Jerusalem and on this donkey, and then everyone thinks he's gonna set himself as king, and instead of doing that, he gets arrested and tried and beaten. And then in disbelief, in frustration, in hurt, Peter, go back. And Peter left the courtyard weeping bitterly. This is his best friend. He's frustrated, he's ashamed, because he had these expectations for who Jesus was going to be, and Jesus didn't meet them. A few days later, after Jesus has already died and his disciples are dispersing back to their hometowns, two of them are walking to Emmaus, and this conversation happens. These two disciples they're actually talking to Jesus about Jesus, and they don't recognize him. They say, we had hoped he, Jesus, was the Messiah who had come to rescue Israel. This all happened 3 days ago. They're like, we had hoped Jesus would be the one. We had hoped Jesus would be the source of freedom. We had hoped that he would be the one that would set us free and that we would no longer be enslaved and we would have meaning and we would have purpose again. We had hoped, but our hope died with Jesus. We thought he was going to be this king, but he wasn't. And so these people who had walked with Jesus, they had talked with Jesus. They saw the incredible things Jesus had done. They watched him do miracles. All of these things happened. And they walked away disappointed. And you're like, how is that possible? How could people have seen the things that Jesus did and heard his words and walked away disappointed? Like, how is that even a possibility? It's because their expectations defined their experience of him. I mean, they saw him do these amazing things. They saw him say these words that were purposeful and powerful and freeing. And they walked away disappointed because they had their expectations on him that he didn't meet their expectations. He was never intended to meet their expectations. And so they were disappointed with God when they experienced him. Because in life, all of life, not just spiritual journeys, but all of life, your expectation defines your experience. You guys ever had this happen where someone's talking to you about a movie and they're like, oh my goodness. You have to go see, Black Panther or whatever, right? You know, or Downsizing or whatever movie it is. It's the greatest movie of all time. And then you go see it and you're like, I mean, it was good. It wasn't that good because your expectation of it, someone had set it up so high that there was nowhere it could go except for down because your expectation had defined the experience. Let me go another way. What I have in this bag is a bacon, egg, and cheese croissant from Dunkin' Donuts. What you'll see here is a picture of a bacon, egg, and cheese croissant from Dunkin' Donuts. Now, do you guys know where this is going? Who thinks this bacon, egg, and cheese croissant from Dunkin' Donuts will look like that bacon, egg, and cheese croissant from Dunkin' Donuts? Keep in mind, I have not looked at this bacon, egg, and cheese croissant from Dunkin' Donuts. A disinterested teenager made it for me about an hour and a half ago. When he wrapped it up, I have not opened it since. Let's find out together. Well, first off, the thickness of this guy is not anywhere. Let's see. Let's find out together what it looks like. Okay. So, right off the bat, it's not looking good. I mean, this looks nothing like that one. You guys in the back, you want to see? I don't know what that is exactly. You saw me open this. I didn't doctor this. This had not been opened. This is the product that... Now, who is surprised this looks this way? Anyone? Why aren't you surprised? Because you've had this experience before, right? You know that when you order something, it never looks like the picture. You're not surprised here because you thought the experience is going to define the expectation that's going to find the experience was it doesn't look like this. But I turned it on you, and you knew it wasn't going to look at the picture. And so your experience is defined by the expectation that's not going to look at the picture. And you're like, yeah, I was right. See, it didn't look at the picture at all because you knew this was coming. Because our expectation defines our experience. If I had got open this and it looked like the picture, we all would have felt surprised, right? Because our expectation was defined by our previous experience. So I am not mocking this. I am not, if you met your spouse online dating, good for you, more power to you. I am so glad that I met my wife before online dating became a thing, because I hear that people do funny things with their profiles and their pictures that aren't super accurate to who they are. Like, you show up to a date from an online profile, and like, hey, I'm looking for so-and-so. Like, yeah, that's me. That's you. You pull up the profile. This doesn't look like you. Oh, yeah, that's me back in 95. That's me, though. That's what I looked like 20 years ago. Okay, check, please. Because your expectation has defined the experience. In all of life, our expectation defines our... Let me put this away. Before I sit on it, that'd be unexpected. In all of life, our expectation defines our experience. This is how someone like Jesus could come and do amazing, miraculous things, and people walk away disappointed because he didn't do what they expected him to do. He didn't meet their expectations. So their experiences with him were disappointed. So I ask you, do you have expectations for God? Do you approach God with your expectations for him? Because just like them, your expectations from God will determine your experience with him. I hear stories all the time of people who walk away from church because something difficult happened, or walk away from the faith because something happened, they couldn't explain it, and they had expectations for God, and God didn't meet those expectations, so there must not be a God. Do you approach God with a sense of expectation? Like, God, I have expectations. You have to meet my expectations in the manner of my expectations, in the way, in the time of my expectations. If not, I'll be disappointed with you, and you must not be real because you didn't meet my expectations for you. And what happens is if we have expectations for God, what we're doing is we approach God on his throne. We say, excuse me, sir, you're in my seat. We remove God from the throne, and we put ourselves on it because we expect God to meet our expectations. And so our experiences of God are disappointed. So this is the question today. Jesus spent his entire life dealing with people's expectations from him and people's disappointment with him. Do we have the exact same expectations? Do you approach God with expectations, or do you approach God with a sense of expectancy? See, expectations says, God, you have to do what I want, when I want, in the manner I want, in a timely fashion. I'm going to be disappointed with you. But a sense of expectancy says, God, I know your character. I know what you're like. I know that you are good. I know that you work on my behalf, even if I don't see it. I know that you keep your promises. And so if something hard comes along, I may not understand it right away, but I know you're up to something. Otherwise, you wouldn't have allowed it. So I'm just going to wait and see what you do next. Expectation says, no, God, you have to do this in this way so that I am appeased. Expectancy says, I know your character. I know you keep your promises. So I'm going to try to learn from this experience what I can glean from this experience. Do we approach God with an expectation, or do we approach God with a sense of expectancy? This is a quote that it's attributed to several people, so you're not going to see it on the screen. Probably Mark Twain, but we can't prove that. It's that it says this. It says that God made man in his image, and man, being a gentleman, returned the favor. It's that we have created God in our image, that we have this expectation for who God is and how he'll move and how he'll act. And if God doesn't meet our expectation, God disappoints us, as backwards and impossible as that sounds. Anne Lamott, this is a quote I can read you. It's in her book. Anne Lamott says, you can safely assume you've created God in your image when God hates all the same people you do. Well, God obviously hates Democrats. God obviously hates Republicans. God obviously hates gun reform people. God obviously hates people who don't want to reform guns. God obviously hates gay people. God obviously hates homophobic people. You created God in your image when God hates all the same people you do. That's what happens when we approach God with our expectations. But approaching God with a sense of expectancy, it's so different than that. I mean, it seems like it's the same, but it's so different because it's the posture in which you approach God with. It's what's going on in your heart when you approach God. Look at Psalm 62 with me for a second. Psalm 62 says this, let all that I am wait patient, quietly before God, for my hope is in him. Let all that I am wait quietly before God. All of my fears, all of my bitterness, all of my unforgiveness, all of the ungrace I offer to other people, all of my experiences with people, all the times people have let me down, all the things I can't explain, but all that I am, wait quietly before God, for my hope is in him. This is not the posture of, God, meet my wants, meet my desires in a timely fashion. I'm going to be disappointed with you. This is, God, I know who you are. I know that you love. I know that you're at work for me, behind me. I know that you keep your promises. So I'm going to wait for you. I am going to wait with expectancy. I don't know what you're going to do, but I know you're going to do something. So I'm going to wait. Colossians 4, chapter 2 says this. Devote yourselves to prayer with an alert mind and a thankful heart. This is not someone who's passive. It's someone who is devoting their lives and their time and their heart to prayer. However, they're doing so with an alert mind. There's an expectancy with how they live. They are watching and waiting for what God does next. I love this verse in the Message translation. The Message translation says it this way. Pray diligently, but stay alert with your eyes wide open in gratitude. God, I know who you are. I know that your character. I know that you are going to do what is best for me and keep your promises. I can't wait for what you do next. It's going to be good. Stay alert with your eyes wide open in gratitude. Expectations say, give me what I want. Expectancy says, give me what you know I need. Expectations say, promise me I'll get, fill in the blank. Expectancy says, just keep your promises you've made me. Expectations say, make me happy. Expectancy says, make me whole. Expectations say, how could my kid have made that choice? You couldn't have possibly let them. Expectancy says, have the same grace and forgiveness for my kid you've always shown me. Expectation says, you must not be real, because if you were real, you never would have allowed. Expectancy says, you must be up to something. Otherwise, you never would have allowed. See, expectation and expectancy, they feel the same. But it's a It's a vast difference. It's a from the ground up DNA level difference in how we approach God, what we think about God, what we think about ourselves, what we think about our relationship with God. I mean, when we approach God with expectations, we are the center of the universe. When we approach God with expectancy, he is, and we rely on his promises, and we rely on his character, and the fact that he promises he will never change. And he is good. And he is working on our behalf. So this is a question. Do you approach God with your expectations, the same way that people approach Jesus with expectations? Or do you approach God with a sense of expectancy? That when things are hard, when things are unexplainable, uncontrollable, that you know that God has not changed and he's still on his throne. I'm going to end with like an allegory of sorts, a metaphor of sorts. So kids always do the same thing when they go to the beach. See, we're beach people. And kids always do the same thing at the beach. If you have kids, you've probably seen this before, where a kid will go to the beach, and what they'll do is they'll be in the sand, and they'll dig a hole in the sand. They dig in a little hole, and then they take their bucket, and they go to the ocean, and they fill up with ocean water, and they pour the ocean water into the hole, and what happens? Like, the sand drinks it all up, right? And so they go back to the ocean, and they get more ocean water. By the way, the band's going to come out here in a second. And they're going to pour it into the hole, and the sand, like, they drink up the ocean water more, and they go and get more water, and they pour it into the hole. And eventually, if they put enough ocean water into the sand hole, then what's going to happen is the sand is drenched, and there's going to be a little puddle here, right? There's going to be a puddle where here on the beach, and they like this water, but they don't like that water, even though they just got this water from that water. And so they have this entire ocean here, but they're playing in this puddle. Right? And they just worked like half an hour to make sure there's a puddle of water that was just part of this water, but they don't want that water. They want this water. They're like, okay, it just keeps them busy. They're not running away. They're not fighting. That's cool. Whatever, you know? You know, it works. It's fun. And sometimes the hole gets huge and you bury people. It's great fun. You're like, why is this water good and this water is bad? Like, why do you want this puddle of sandy water here when you have this infinite, beautiful, mysterious, transcendent, poetic ocean here? Like, why do you want this small puddle of water when this is here? You just took this from this. This is a small part of what this is. So why do you need this? It's because this is controllable. This is safe. This is the opposite of transcendent and mysterious and powerful and infinite and beautiful. This is under your control. And this is scary. This is big. This is infinite. This is mysterious. This is exactly what we do with God. We say, I have expectations for you, God. I'm going to put you in this little puddle. I'm going to take this little bit of who you are and put it here and let this part be controllable and safe and under my command. And all the while, an infinite, beautiful, beyond, poetic, mysterious God is right there waiting for you. We want to control instead of giving ourselves over to. Don't splash around in sandy water of your expectations from God when the infinite, mysterious, beautiful, poetic, transcendent ocean is right there for the taking. Don't approach God with your expectations. Have a posture of expectancy. I mean, you don't always know what God is up to, but you know he's up to something. I'm gonna wait for it with eyes wide open in gratitude. What normally happens now is that I close in prayer. But we're not going to do that today. We're going to sing a song called Oceans, which is about stepping out past where we're comfortable, having God call us somewhere that at first glance feels unsafe. Like when we step out into the water in this metaphor, like it at first it feels like it's going to be dangerous and unsafe, and what am I doing? Like every instinct in my body says, no, go back to what you can control, go back to the little puddle. But this song, Oceans, it's God calling us out into the water where your spirit leads, where it's not always controllable. It doesn't always feel safe, but it's exactly where God designed us to be. And so we sing this song. Don't just have it be a song you're singing. Have it be a prayer in your heart that's emanating from your lips. Have this be a prayer. We're all going to collectively close in prayer today. As we sing Oceans, allow that to be the prayer of your heart, but the prayer on your lips.
Harper, would you stand with me? You call me out upon the waters, the great unknown, where feet may fail. And there I find you in the mystery, in oceans deep, my faith will stand. And I will call upon your name and keep my eyes above the waves. When oceans rise, my soul will rest in your embrace, for abounds in deepest waters, your sovereign hand will be my guide. Where fear may fail and fear surrounds me, my soul will rest in you.